Hey, have you guys signed up for the 5K yet?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We just signed up yesterday.
Yep. I'm kind of nervous. I haven't got much of my running time in since Ella was born.
Mm-hmm. You'll be fine.
So, Sarah, tell me, how is it having three compared to two?
Three kids is challenging. Mm-hmm. We're outnumbered, you know?
And I hear that your youngest is already playing sports?
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow. He's very well advanced for his age, and he's also an artist. So what we decided to do was go ahead and sell some of his work on Etsy. And then we're going to retire. Yes.
Yep. How old is he?
Five.
Wow. Oh, they grow up so fast.
Don't they?
You know, I remember...
Ella? Ella, get down from there. Ella, get down. Ella, get down. Thank you, sweetie. Mm.
She is such an explorer, that one. She really does have the adventurer spirit.
I'm sorry. Tommy? Hey, Tommy? Hey, Tommy. Tommy. Tommy, could you get out of the mud, buddy? Okay, thank you. Thank you. He's an explorer, too. Yeah, for sure.
So, Phil, Sarah tells me that you're helping coach Tommy's baseball team?
Yes, yes. And I'm so excited about it.
She is still not getting down. Ella! Ella, get down from there. Ella, get down!
Listen to your mother, Ella.
One. Two. Thank you, sweetie. Mm-hmm.
The kids are so excited this year. They got new uniforms, and it's this little yellow stripe. Tommy, can you get out of the mud, man?
Do you hear, Father? You get out of the mud.
Why are you still in the mud?
Get out of the mud!
Tommy,
how many times
do I... One.
Tommy.
Two. Two and a half, for real?
Two and three quarters.
Thank you, buddy.
The baseball outfits are so cute.
Would you like some more water?
I would love some more water.
Well, should we tell them?
Sure.
We have some pretty big news.
What?
It's still a little early, but we're pregnant.
Now I am not going to tell you again.
Ella.
Tommy.
One.
Tommy, what are you
Tommy,
doing?
Tommy, you are still in the mud, brother.
Two.
2.2.
Tommy?
Tommy, I'm not having it.
Tommy, get out of the mud, man.
Don't you dare.
Do not let me get to three.
Two and a half? I'm
so
tired of telling you this.
Get out of the mud.
Lips are pursing. Do you hear me?
No, no.
Two and 12.
Get out of the mud. Get out of there.
Man, I will set you on fire.
You hear your mother's tone?
Ella!
Now! Get out of the mud.
Thanks,
you,
buddy.
Sweetie. Yeah.
It's mama's little genius.
They're so sweet.
The next president.
There you go.
Can't live without him.
Can't live without this potato salad. Am I right?
I can see it.
So last week we started a conversation of Better Us. This is a conversation about family. This is a conversation that changes lives. It changes everything. And for the better. Today we're specifically talking about parenting. Now, having kids brings a level of difficulty and near impossibility to things that you never even thought were an issue before. I'm talking about things like leaving the house. Now, before you have kids, this is how you leave the house. Shall we leave the house? We shall. Now, this is how I leave the house nearly every day. Krista, get down. We're late already. Morgan, where is your shoes? No, you cannot wear boots without socks. arms up, arms in, foot in. Drive off from the back seat. Where's my milk? Where's my blanket? Drive back to the house. Go get that. Or things like sleeping at night. Before you have kids, you say, good night, sleep well. And then sometimes the other person says, I will, I'll sleep well. That's so cocky, that's so arrogant. Now that we have kids, we don't say good night, we say good luck. I can promise you, as we talk about family, we're gonna discuss some things and you'll say, you know what, that's not the way my parents did that. Well, good. That's not the way my neighbors do it. Okay. That's not what I see on TV with families, and you're right. God created family, so we're going to go to Him to see what He intended this thing to be. You know, I believe that family is the second most important issue in our lives. The first issue is this: am I following Jesus? Do I know Jesus? And the second issue is this: did I get my family right? And if I get nothing else right in life, if I never get on that career path, if I never get that vacation home, I don't care as long as I got family right. This is really the second most important issue in your entire life. Today is a difficult day because I'm going to try to convince you to buy a gym membership. And even more difficult than that, I'm going to try to convince you to use it. Not an actual gym membership, but here's the deal. Being a part of a family is a lot like being a member of a gym. Here's the deal. There is a lot of us who are members of gyms. We're just not active participants at the gym, right? And you can have a gym membership, but if you don't participate, you get none of the benefit. Some of us, when it comes to our families, that's how we are. We are members. We're just not high-level participants. And here's what you need to know. You will get out of your family what you put into your family. In the same way, you will get out of your gym what you put into the gym. Isn't it true you can be standing in line at the store, and if someone's standing in front of you and they are serious about the gym, you don't even have to ask. You just know. I mean, biceps don't even fit into their shirt. I mean, her thighs rock hard. You don't even have to ask. How cool would it be when we are at the store? Someone would say, you know what? They see our kids in preschool. They say, you know what, those people are serious about their family. I mean, it's just obvious by the love and the sense of belonging, it's obvious those people have put some serious investment into their family. How cool would that conversation be? And here's why this is critical. At some point, every one of our families, we will hit a crisis point. At some point, every one of our families will end up in a storm. And if you do not train ahead of time, if you do not condition yourself, if you do not put in the preparation ahead of time, family could fall apart. And so we're going to look in the book of 1 Samuel, and we're going to walk through the story of a guy who unfortunately does not do family well. And we're going to learn from his mistakes, and we're literally going to see what he does and then turn and go exactly the opposite direction. It's 1 Samuel chapter 2. And I'll set this up. This is the story of a high priest in Israel, and his name is Eli. At the point that we jump into his story, he's older, he's up in years, and he's semi-retired, but he's still the high priest, and he's allowing his sons to do most of the priestly duties. The problem is, his sons are a mess. His family is a mess. And you are going to peek into the story and ask the question, how did things get this way? What could he have done? What should he have done to make things just a little bit different? And so we're going to look in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 12. Here's what it says about Eli's sons. Eli's sons were scoundrels. See, that's Bible talk for they were really messed up. Eli's sons were scoundrels. They had no regard for the Lord. So thinking about this, they have the occupation as high priest, and yet they have no regard for God. The next few verses go on to describe that as people would bring their sacrifices to the temple, the sons of Eli were stealing the meat. They're stealing the sacrifice meat. No regard for God, let alone the people that they are stealing from. Now jump down to verse 22. It says, now Eli, who was very old, heard about everything his sons were doing to all Israel, and how they slept with the women who served at the entrance to the tent of meeting. So not only are they stealing, they're serving as priests in the temple, they're stealing the sacrifices, but now they're using their position, their authority, to manipulate the young ladies to sleep with them at the temple. And you go, wow. I mean, what a mess. Clearly a dysfunctional, screwed up family. And here's the interesting part of this all. Eli, the dad, Eli is a good guy. The book of Samuel was written by Samuel, who was actually an apprentice to Eli. And Eli is the most significant man, the most significant influence in the life of Samuel. Samuel goes on to be a remarkable prophet of God. And yet, ready for this? That doesn't show up in the lives of Eli's sons. And so catch this. I'm convinced that Eli, while he was serving as high priest, he saw working with his intern Samuel as part of his job. He is fully invested in his job. But when he comes home, he's checked out. And although Eli, he is a good man, his sons don't experience that because Eli is tired by the time he gets home. And let's talk about this again because this is huge. Family is big. This becomes the biggest regret in Eli's life, that he is a good priest but a lousy parent. And I'm just going to tell you, if you get nothing else right in life, I don't care how bright and shiny that name tag is at your door at work, I don't care if you have an emblem on your car, or if you can vacation around the world, if your family doesn't land, it won't matter, because family is a big deal. There are some benefits to family that we all know. If I asked you, what are families good for? You might say, families provide a good place, a safe place to figure out life. Families are a place of acceptance. You're always accepted in your family. No matter how messed up you are, you're always accepted at home. Families are where we learn to deal with conflict. That's why God gives us dumb brothers and sisters, so we can learn to deal with conflict. Some of the best stuff in life we learn in family. But there's something else that family was intended for, and it's this: to reflect the very image of God. And it's this part of family that we most misunderstand. And when we miss this, when we don't get this part of family right, it becomes the most destructive. And so I want to walk through some of the job descriptions that God has given to us as parents. And then I'm going to fill in some of the consequences that happen when we don't fulfill those roles. And the way that I'm doing that is I'm leaning on the last 15 years that I've been the young adult pastor here at the church. What is the impact on someone who comes from either a broken family or a family that's passive and says, hey, we're just not going to get that involved. We're not going to do family right. We're just going to survive family. We're not going to engage. We're going to have membership. We're just not going to participate. I'm telling you, you can look at two people, one person from a passive family and then one who comes from a family who says, you know what, I'm going to be active, I'm going to put in our time. You can predict with great accuracy the struggles that will happen the person coming from a passive home. It immediately takes everything that's hard in life and makes it harder. Here's why. Because you and I were intended to get our image of God from our family. When you have a mom and a dad and they're both engaged, there's a balancing effect there. There's this wonderful blending that happens, and this becomes a primary conduit in which our children experience and see the image of God. On the dad's side, they will get this. They will get justice. Hey, you just talk back to your mom. You are going to get a spanking. You get a timeout, whatever it is. You know what dads are really good at? Driving down the road, And all of a sudden, there's like civil war breaking out in the back seat. All right? And Dad says, don't make me come back there. Well, what's Dad gonna do? You're driving 70 miles down the road. So all of a sudden, one of your hands becomes a python, right? Blind and just swatting around, and the kids go get in the corner because they don't want to get hit. But Dad knows how to solve that, right? Just one good brake check, and then you get them right in place, and justice. Justice and the idea of truth. Dad says, you know what? That's true, and that's a lie. That's right, that's wrong. That comes from Dad's side. From the mom's side, they're going to get compassion. You know, after they've been corrected, to say, you know what? You got to understand the heart behind this. You got to get where they were coming from. Or, hey, what you're doing, how you're talking is harsh. You're going to wound their spirit. Think about this. Isn't this absolutely the image of God, that we serve a God who is just and true, who does not overlook the sins or the wrongs we commit, who says, yes, there is a consequence for that, and yet in that moment acts with absolute compassion and says, hey, we don't throw anyone away. We're talking about restoration. We're putting our arms around you. And so out of that, we learn how to respect God. We learn how to love God. The primary source for our understanding of who God is comes with this interaction within family. Now, in the midst of that, mom is also the primary source for understanding unconditional love. Isn't that true? I mean, how many times have we said as dads, if we could just kill them, that would solve everything. Right? They're 5 years old. They can make it on their own. Mom says, no, 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 no. Unconditional love. Mom is where we get that from. From mom, we get second chances. Hey, you may have blown it, but we are not giving up on you. To go back to that dad side now, dads are the primary conduit of sexuality. And so if you doubt this, be a father looking at things online that you shouldn't be looking at. Or be a dad who every time that little gal walks by wearing the short shorts and you just zoom in and you allow your kids to see that, I can tell you how your daughters will dress one day. I can tell you how your sons will not respect women. Because the primary conduit by which kids, they understand sexuality is dad. And then there's this last area, morals. And moms, you are also a contributor to this, but there is something the way that God has wired us, let the loudest voice in the room, let, hey, that is right, that is wrong, you should, you shouldn't, is dad. He is the deepest and brightest reflection of that. And so this is why families are huge. Think about this. Many of us, we've come from homes that have been broken up. And I guarantee you, if you have, you have struggled to understand the image of God like this. Like God is a loving father who also affirms justice. If you've come from a family where either mom or dad, they just sat it out, they were passive, I guarantee you there's been an aspect of sexuality that you have struggled with because you didn't get to see that image functioning within the home. And so I want to go back to our story. Remember Eli and his family? What goes wrong in his family that everything goes so off track? So let's go back to 1 Samuel 2, verse 22. And I'm going to ask you to read between the lines because what we are seeing here is not immediately obvious until you kind of stop and think about it. Now Eli, who was very old, heard about everything his sons were doing to all Israel and how they slept with the women who served at the entrance to the tent of meeting. So he said to them, why do you do such things? I hear from all the people about the wicked deeds of yours. No, my sons, the report I hear spreading among the Lord's people is not good. If one person sins against another, God may mediate for the offender. But if anyone sins against the Lord, who will intercede for them? I mean, this is crazy. Guys, why would you do this? What does Eli miss in this confrontation? He is all talk and no action. Eli is still the high priest. He could fire those boys in an instant. He can say, "You do not have that job anymore." He's still their dad. And even though these boys are older within Oriental culture, he has every ability to bring consequence into their life. And Eli stops at talking, even though he has the ability to go further, because at the end of the day, Eli is passive. This is the husband who says to the kids, "You know what, don't talk to your mom like that," and then stops. What's that kid going to do the next time he's frustrated with his mom? He's going to talk back because you didn't follow through. Passive. So this is what I think may have happened. Eli, he is working at the temple when he's a young man. He's working late nights. And because he's working really hard to kind of put his career up and to serve the community really well, after long hours, he would just come home and watch SportsCenter. And he would check out some World Cup action. And then so he could do his father part at the end of the day, he would tuck his kids into bed and say, "I love you." And he thought he was being a parent, but actually he was being passive. See, he's going to the gym, he's just not picking up any of the heavy weights. You know, he's doing those little 5-pounders. I mean, you're never going to see results that way. If you're just mailing it in, saying every once in a while, "I'm just going to do a few things," you are not showing the image of God to your family. You are not going to have kids interested in taking on that baton of faith. You're going to have to dial up some weight. You're going to have to start doing some major working out if you're going to show your family the image of God. And here's the interesting part. Being passive is just as disruptive as leaving. I just want to say that again to let it sink in. Staying in your family and choosing to be passive, although I would always encourage you to stay, but being passive is just as destructive as not being there. Think about your gym membership. You say, "Hey, well, at least I didn't cancel my membership. I just don't go." You are going to get the same result as the person who canceled their membership. It's why you and I, we have to get active in our families, why there is a power when we step in and say, "I'm going to start lifting the heavy weights." Through his passivity, Eli does not contribute a sense of justice and an understanding of right and wrong to his family. So guess what his sons struggle with? They struggle to respect God, and they struggle with their sexuality. They are taking advantage of the young ladies at the temple. Their morals are all screwed up. They're stealing temple meat. Isn't that interesting? And moms, check this out. If you think taking kids to soccer practice so you can sit on the sidelines to do Facebook is being active, guess what your kids will not get? They will never see God as an understanding and compassionate God who forgives and restores. They will not see that unconditional love of God in their lives. And this may be the most important part of family, that when we misunderstand, every now and then, someone will tell me this: "Hey, we're just going to get a divorce." And I'll ask, "Why are you getting a divorce?" Say, "All we do is fight. All we do is fight. The home is toxic. All our kids are seeing us fighting. And so we've come to the conclusion that it's better to have kids live in a peaceful environment with one parent than to live in an environment with two parents that's toxic for them." That is not the right decision. You know what the right decision is? Stop fighting and grow up and go to a counselor or talk to a pastor. Learn how to disagree without saying mean, angry, hurtful things. Learn to be a grown-up. But don't break up a family and take out half the image of God. I want you to look at this graphic again. Which side of this would you choose for your kids to grow up without? Because that's what happens either in the case of divorce or when one parent decides to be passive. Which side of this would you say, my kids don't need that? And here's the interesting thing about Eli. Eli is a good guy. He ends up being the mentor for Samuel. He is the most significant man in Samuel's life. Samuel goes on to live a remarkable life as prophet. And here's what you need to know. Eli has the capacity. He's just simply checked out. So here's the fun part of all of this. If you would check in, if you would say, hey, I don't care if I get nothing else right in life, I'm going to check in. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to begin to lift the heavy weights. I'm going to start building up my family. You realize you have the capacity to literally change everything about your home. You have it. It just may be you haven't been showing up at the gym yet. So what should Eli have done? What should have been his response to his sons? Eli should have disciplined his sons. Eli should have said, I'm going to train my sons for when they are tempted to steal, I'm going to train them ahead of time to be prepared. I'm going to prepare my sons for when they are tempted to manipulate young ladies to stand. I'm going to prepare my family for when their faith is tested. I'm going to do the heavy lifting. I'm going to go to the gym. When we discipline our kids, it's another aspect of the image of God. We're showing that God sees the value and necessity of disciplining us as his kids. Hebrews chapter 12, starting with verse 5, says, and have you completely forgotten this word of encouragement that addresses you as a father addresses his son? It says, my son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline and do not lose heart when he rebukes you, because the Lord disciplines the one he loves and he chastens everyone he accepts as his son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as his children. For what children are not disciplined by their father? If you are not disciplined and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are not legitimate, not true sons and daughters at all. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of spirits and live? They disciplined us for a little while they thought best. But God disciplines us for our good, in order that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Can I honestly tell you how I was surprised as a parent how early on the challenge of discipline entered our home? That I would just be enjoying spending time with my little beautiful girls, and then all of a sudden it's like, ooh, where did that come from? Ooh. Scott, that's a little bit of a temper right there. And you know what? We can't overlook it. We can't dismiss it. You know, one of the ways you can know that you're a passive parent is this. If when your child acts up, when your child disobeys, you say, you know what? It's just a season. You know what? All kids do this. All kids go through this. Man, they'll grow out of it. No, you have got to get active. You have got to get hands-on, because not only are you shaping their character, you are shaping a soul, an eternal soul. Proverbs 19:18 says this, discipline your son while there is hope. and do not desire his death. Notice again and again, Scripture uses the word discipline. A lot of us grew up in homes where there was punishment. And so a lot of us, we like to swing the pendulum to the other side. But punishment and discipline are not the same things. The purpose of punishment is to pay a penalty. But the purpose of discipline is for maturity. The focus of punishment is on past wrongs, but the focus of discipline is on a better future. The attitude of punishment is often out of anger and revenge. Discipline flows out of love. The result of punishment is fear and guilt, but the result of discipline is security. And Eli, he should have engaged. He should have disciplined his sons while there was still hope. As we continue over the next 2 weeks, we're going to push into you in two specific ways. One is specific today, and it is this: that you would engage in your family like never before. That you would say, you know what, this is how often I've been going to the gym. Maybe this is my level of engagement, and I'm just going to kick it up a notch or two. I'm going to take my family to a whole new level. When you go to the gym, you get out of the gym what you put into the gym. And when it comes to our families, you will get out of your family what you put into your family. And the second thing is this. This is the bigger theme of this series, that we would intentionally decide to create Christ-centered homes. We will not drift into becoming a Christ-centered home. It's a grind. It's a decision that we make. To say, I don't care what they're showing on TV. I don't care what my neighbors do. I don't care if it even makes my family weird. I'm going to choose to have a Christ-centered family. You know what I think is happening? I think we watch all sorts of reality TV. We watch Modern Family and we say, hey, my family is not as screwed up as that. So we must be pretty healthy. And so we are about an arm's length away from chaos, and we think we're doing okay. Because we've watched everyone else's messed up homes and said, hey, we're better than that. And the truth is, all of us need to go to Jesus Christ and say, what did you build my family to be? What do you intend for my home to be? And if we would go to Jesus, our homes would be so remarkable and strong if the focus was on him and not on culture. And so just a few questions. If you were going to have a Christ-centered family, would that change the way that you talk in your home? Would it talk the way that you talk to the kids or spouses talk to each other if you were a Christ-centered family? If you were a Christ-centered family, would it change the way that you spend your time as a family? Driving kids to dance practice is not family time. If you were a Christ-centered home, how often would you go to church? Waking up on Sunday morning, would this be an option, a maybe, if you're a Christ-centered home? So I'm going to ask you to move from being passive to engaged. And there is power when we say, we're going to do family the way God says to do it. Think of this. How fun would the day be when your neighbors say, what in the world is going on in your home? I mean, why do you and your spouse love each other the way you do? What is going on that your kids are so well behaved? Why is it when adversity comes your way, man, you just pass right through it? What is that? And I'm jealous, and I'm intrigued, and I'm curious to know why your home is so different from my home. You know, the story of Eli, it finishes like this. Eli never reinvests. He never engages, and the story ends like this. His sons go off with the armies of Israel to battle, and because they haven't honored God, God decides, I will not honor them and does not protect them. And so both his sons die on the same day. When the messenger comes back to Eli and says, both your sons have died, scripture says Eli was sitting on a chair. And because he was a heavy guy, he kind of fell backwards and hit his neck, and his neck snapped. And Eli died on the very same day. The whole family of Eli perishes it. How much better would the story have been if Eli would have engaged, if Eli decided, I'm going to discipline my sons while there is still hope, but I'm going to model God in front of them. They're going to see the image of God. I just want to say this. I know some of us are thinking, you know what? I've got kids now. They're in middle school, high school. Man, I can already see the effects of not going to the gym. Some of us are thinking, you know what? I'm a grandparent. I'm looking at my grandkids and I'm scared. I just want to say this. As long as they are alive, there is hope. As long as they are alive, you have a God that hears you. Go to the gym. Get active with your family.